Hi, everybody. Welcome to FNS Wrestling Podcast. I am your host, back with another solo mission to take a look at Ring of Honor episode 509, I believe, from June 20th. Just yesterday is when I watched it. If you are a new listener, welcome. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. Just to kind of update you, last week was a really busy week for the FNS Wrestling Podcast. We put out 4 episodes, new content last week. This week's looking like at least 3, as we'll have today's. My son and I will probably sit down and talk about Hell in a Cell that we finished last night. We'll talk about that tonight, hopefully get that up and published as well later today. And then we will be back on Saturday for our flagship show, where we talk about AEW Dynamite and NXT and Impact Wrestling, and some wrestling trivia, some wrestling figure updates, some news and rumors, all of that good stuff. So yeah, it's another hot, steamy day here in Southern Ontario, so I thought I would escape to the safety of my nice, cool basement and talk about some wrestling for the few of you that actually enjoy hearing about some Ring of Honor. So I don't really have too much else to say today, so I say we get into this review now. So let's take a look at Ring of Honor, episode 509. So this episode begins with Quinn welcoming us, as she always does, before quickly summarizing the Survival of the Fittest tournament up to this point. So Flamita has defeated Ray Orris, Brian Johnson defeated Sledge, and last week Eli Isom defeated Dak Draper to earn a spot in the 6-way final match that is actually going to be on next week's show, we find out. So on the ROH YouTube show called Week by Week, they tell us Chris Dickinson defeated, by submission, O'Shea Edwards to advance. I apologize to you guys, I didn't find the time to watch this match. I was kind of interested to see O'Shea Edwards because I don't know much about him, so I may go back and check it out, but to this point I haven't, so I can't really comment on the quality of that match. On the show today, we will see the tournament continue. Bandido will face Bateman in a round one match. And then this week, back on their week-to-week YouTube show, the final qualifying match for the Survival of the Fittest tournament will take place, as Danhausen will face Rhett Titus. So next week, as I said, we're going to get this final 6-way elimination match on ROH TV, and we'll find out who earns the ROH world title shot, as the winner of that match will. So in the main event tonight, Quinn tells us we will get a triple threat match for the ROH Television Championship, as Tracy Williams, Dragon Lee, and the defending champion Tony Deppen will face off. Dragon Lee is the former champion who never actually lost the title. Kenny King defended it for him because Dragon Lee was injured, and King lost the TV title to Tracy Williams, who then lost it to Tony Deppen before Dragon Lee even got his opportunity to win it back. So I guess this is his opportunity. And just on a personal note, I am pretty hyped for this show, because Dragon Lee and Bandido, if you listen to me talk about ROH, you know those are two of my favorite guys in this company. So I thought this was setting up to be a pretty entertaining show. So let's see how it goes. It starts out with Bandido speaking briefly before he has his match. He says he hopes that Bateman comes to the ring alone tonight to face him one-on-one, as he is going to take his first step to becoming ROH champion, which is the reason that the best come to ROH. He briefly then switches to Spanish to finish the promo, saying that he will show why the Mexican people support him. And I mean, this was nothing special, just a solid babyface promo here, a guy who respects the ROH company and wants to hold their most prestigious title. So pretty much a straightforward babyface promo here. Then Bateman gets his turn to speak. He says the table is set and now it's time to eat. Who will survive and how much will they have left by the end? It's all laid out. It's about how bad you want to get on board to get a title shot. He says styles make fights, and it doesn't get much different than he and Bandido. I would have to agree there. Bandido is quick, young, and ugly under that mask, but Bateman can put him down with an elbow to any part of his body. You can ask around. He says God lives in his elbow, and we will see if Bandido can survive. He criticizes Bandido's generic reasons for wanting the title, to impress his family, his people, etc. And he finishes by saying he will walk through 11 other people if he has to justify the many years that he has put into this profession while being overlooked. And then he announces, surprisingly, he will then hand the title, when he wins it, over to Vincent, the leader of his faction. What are they called? The Righteous, I believe. So that's his plan. I thought Bateman's promo was good. He had this kind of calm, collected delivery for most of it, showed a little bit of fire when he started to talk about his lengthy career in wrestling and sort of waiting for this opportunity. I thought he spoke really well here. I thought his was a good segment. added a little bit of interest to this match. So then we get Bateman, who does come out with Vita Von Starr and Dutch versus Bandido. So it doesn't look like Bandito's going to get his way and face Bateman with nobody at ringside. But they do actually get sent away by the referee very early in this. So it ends up being a one-on-one match. Bateman, just to sort of give my thoughts, I think he's solid in the ring. I don't find him super exciting generally, but I don't think that's his style. I don't think he intends to be. He's looking to be like high impact kind of deliberate offense. So the contrast in styles, because Bandido is the opposite of that, right? Not that Bandito's not incredibly strong, but he relies on a lot of quickness and high flying stuff at times as well. So the contrast in styles is interesting to me. And just to sort of drive that home, we see on the tail of the tape that ROH always gives us that there's a big height advantage for Bateman as well as a weight advantage. So he's 6'3", Bandito's 5'7", Bateman weighs about 250, and Bandito about 183. So a large size discrepancy here to go along with their very different styles. So as I said, the ref sends Von Starr and Dutch to the back. Riccaboni tells us that they are not licensed to be ringside for this. So this is like kind of an old school thing ROH still does, where they're sort of suggesting that to be at ringside, you actually have to have a manager's license or a seconder's, whatever they want to call it, license, which, yeah, that's an old school technique that I kind of think is cool. So there's no code of honor to start this match from Bateman. And we learned that the fans will be back in ROH on July 11th for their major pay-per-view. The name is escaping me. Sorry if you listen to this podcast. You know, sometimes names escape me. But bottom line, fans are coming back, which is great. We get a tie-up with Bateman attempting a dirty break, but Bandito avoids it. Bandito's one step ahead early. Bateman retreats to have a seat in the corner and sort of think about what he's going to do. We get a brief strike exchange and Bateman boots Bandito to the mat. It's a very slow pace to start, as Bateman is sort of looking to avoid letting Bandito get started. And I'm not saying that as a complaint. It's just an observation. Sometimes a slow style makes sense, right? And I think in this case, Bateman is not trying to get involved in a high-speed match with Bandito. Bateman sidesteps a handspring by Bandito and levels him with a chop. We get a twisting leap off the top by Bandito, a hurricanrana that sends Bateman to the floor. Bandito's tripped face-first onto the apron, and then a knee lift by Bateman to Bandito as he's sort of hanging over the edge of the ring. Bateman hits what's kind of like Rhea Ripley's Riptide slam in the middle of the ring. We get a forearm exchange and Bandito's down again. Drop kick to the leg and a dragon screw by Bandito. Shining wizard by Bandito for two. This was impressive. He presses the 250-pound Bateman over his head and then hits a Michinoku driver. Bandito is incredibly strong for his size, and this looked really impressive. Then a standing shooting star by Bandito, also impressive. Fosbury flop to Bateman by Bandito that looked awesome. Bandito then makes a springboard leap at Bateman, but gets caught and floored by a big forearm shot that looked pretty good as well. Rolling neckbreaker by Bateman. Some quick kicks and knees before a crucifix by Bandito. We get an eye gouge and a knee from the second rope by Bateman. Bandito counters Bateman's pile driver finisher with a nice snapping head scissors here, and then that sets up for the 21 plex, which is his finisher, and Bandito picks up the win. It's basically kind of like a rebound German rolling off the opponent's back as he's holding the ropes. It's hard to explain. It takes a little bit of a setup to execute, which I'm not a huge fan of, but it looks cool when he hits it. So it's a German suplex with the bridge. He picks up the pin and the victory here. My thoughts, I thought this match was really logically laid out and really well executed. I quite enjoyed it. Bateman's trying to keep things slow and hit high impact moves and keep Bandito grounded and maybe end it quickly if he can. Bandito's trying to use his quickness to it as his advantage. Both men got to successfully demonstrate their offensive styles in this, I think, and they worked really well together. I mean, I had no doubt coming in that Bandito would win this, but I still enjoyed the match between two completely different styles. So I thought this was a solid start to the show. Then we sort of see Bateman is still lying on his back in the ring as Vincent's theme plays and he appears with Von Starr and Dutch are back again. So they approach Bateman as commentary sort of put over Vincent. He's finally back. He's back, which I needed the reminder because I didn't really miss him while he was gone. So I guess that reminder was useful. He speaks to Bateman. He said he had a moment of clarity and realized that the ROH championship is what's important to him. Bateman failed him, but did not fail himself. This is a righteous rebirth for him. For Bateman, and death is the greatest form of love, he says. Bateman spreads his arms, sort of welcoming this attack that's coming. Von Starr attacks Bateman before Dutch hits him with the black hole slam. And again, Bateman seemed to welcome the attack, so I don't think it necessarily means he's out of this group. This is just sort of how they are punishing him or allowing him to be reborn or whatever their explanation's going to be. Vincent is fine. He's pretty good on the mic. I find the announce team to be somewhat over the top about him. Like, they're trying really, really hard to put him over. I haven't seen him accomplish that much that impresses me, so I'm not really bought in, but I there's potential that I could like him. Takes away a little bit from me because they're trying so hard to get him over. But I mean, this post-match segment was very on brand for Vincent and his group, so I didn't really have a major problem with it. We then get a really quick week-by-week YouTube show promo by Quinn, and I just thought this was about time. I don't know how long the show has been on, but I cover ROH every week and do this podcast, and I had no idea that this YouTube show existed until last week. The next thing we get is quickly promos from the guys who will be on the week-to-week show wrestling, and that's Danhausen. So he talks about he's already lost to Titus before. He actually lost every single match since Final Battle, and this makes him upset as his money sack is dwindling. Perhaps he needs to be less nice and more evil, and then he just gets up and leaves. I don't know, I've said it before with Danhausen, this guy isn't for me. He seems to be having a lot of fun with this strange, quirky character, and I know a lot of people like it, but I just really can't get into it. I don't think it's something that's on a national wrestling program on TV, but that's just me. I'm an older guy. I know Danhausen is a clever, funny guy for sure, but like his shtick, this whole character he's putting on, it's just a miss for me. I don't think it's bad per se. It's just not something I enjoy. So Rhett Titus obviously gets his turn to speak next. He's been chosen to represent the foundation in this tournament. He says this is the fifth time and he's been in the tournament and he's made the finals, but he's never won. In fact, he's never held singles gold, which I was a little bit surprised. And this is the fast way to do it. The fast way to face Roosh. He speaks about Danhausen being nice and evil, but he won't go easy on Danhausen because he stands in the way. He tells Danhausen to know that when it's done and his makeup is smeared all over the mat, it's nothing personal. Just his profession, as he looks down the barrel of the camera. Titus, to me, does not cut the greatest promos. I don't think he's very good. And that might be part of why he's had no singles titles despite wrestling for over a decade now. But I thought this was actually pretty good. He made his goals clear, along with his sort of motivations and reasons for those goals. His quest is to finally earn a singles title in ROH, and that's a pretty easy thing to understand. And I thought he actually did a pretty good job here. Then, in the middle of this, kind of out of nowhere, there's like a flashback to a good chunk of the match between the Briscoes and EC3 and Flip Gordon. So I was kind of wondering what was going on here, but they do explain it. It just shows us EC3 getting the pin, but that EC3 didn't know that Flip helped him win by hitting Briscoe with the chain, right? Which, of course, isn't honorable, and EC3 is all about honor. So it's just sort of reminding us of that whole situation. And then the Briscoes briefly are speaking about it to each other. Things quickly escalate and they're arguing with each other. I'm pretty sure it's their dad who walks in, interrupts them, and said they should settle it old school style with a fight on the farm. And that is what we're going to get in 2 weeks, the Briscoe brothers fight on the farm. This segment was really short and fine, I guess. The match could be really fun, but it just kind of felt like they don't have anything else for the Briscoes to do right now. So may as well kind of have them fight each other again. It might be fun because it is on the farm and they can do all kinds of stuff. It'll, I guess, be a cinematch, for lack of a better term. So they might be lots of fun. But remember, it's kind of like they're going to us. Remember these guys in May? Back in May when they had a miscommunication and lost a meaningless match? Well, now it's over a month later and we're going back to that. So I don't know. It seems a little bit lazy to me, although it's possible that they just have so little TV time and so much talent, I guess, that it took this long to get back around to this. But I don't know, it felt a little bit lazy to me as just a way, they guys don't have anything to do, let's have them do this match. But anyways, the match itself could be interesting, so I guess we'll see. We then move into the main event of the show, which is Dragon Lee versus Tracy Williams versus Tony Deppen for the ROH Television Championship. And just on a personal note, I love Dragon Lee, so I think this should be a fun match. Anything he's been included in hasn't really disappointed me, so I had high hopes for this one. We get brief videos for each of the competitors as they enter. Dragon Lee takes his opportunity to tell us that he never really lost the belt, but that's okay. He has another opportunity today, and he'll never lose after that. Tracy Williams gets his chance, says he made a mistake in his match with Deppen, took his eyes off the prize, and it cost him the title. He's getting a chance to right his wrongs like Dragon Lee, so Tracy can right two wrongs and become champion again. Deppen is tired of being called the least violent member of his Violence Unlimited faction. He is actually the most insane, and he will show us in the match he will leave with the TV title. I don't have much analysis there. It's basically just fairly generic standard promos before this match. Nothing bad, nothing amazing either, just kind of there. As the match starts, Dragon Lee sort of leaves the ring to let the other two start out. And then as they do, he sort of sneaks back in looking for an opportunity to get a quick roll-up attempt early. And then he sort of would slide back out to the floor and let the other two continue. We get holds and counters by Williams and Deppen, with Lee kind of sneaking in again to attempt a pinfall. Lee ducks a chop that hits Deppen, and Williams and Deppen get angry at each other and start striking each other. We get a drop kick by Lee to Williams before a suicide dive by Lee that's caught by both of the other competitors, and they hit Dragon Lee with a double suplex onto the floor. Deppen and Williams argue some more after Deppen tries to pin Dragon Lee right in front of Williams, and they start to fight each other again. So they kind of, this one of the stories is they sort of can't get on the same page to take out Dragon Lee. They end up slipping back into fighting each other anytime they work together. So that was kind of cool. We get a knee, a leg kick, and a low drop kick by Deppen. Deppen's dragged outside and run into the barricade by Williams a little bit later. Dragon Lee drop kicks Williams to the floor, hits a diving tope to both of his competitors while landing on his feet that looked pretty awesome. Big top rope stomp to Deppen, and Williams breaks up the pinfall. We get a pendulum basement kick by Dragon Lee to Tracy Williams and a running drop kick to Deppen. We get more corner drop kicks to each opponent by Dragon Lee just running across and hitting drop kicks. We get a nice Death Valley driver by Williams to Dragon Lee at one point. Williams attacks Deppen in the corner until Deppen escapes, hits a knee to the back of Williams' head. We get a DDT on the top turnbuckle by Williams. It's kind of his signature move that I always have trouble describing, but it looks pretty cool. He ends up dropping the guy sort of headfirst on the top turnbuckle with the DDT. It looks cool. We get fast action for a little bit here, and then all three of the men are down. All three start striking, and then there's a little segment here where everybody gives and receives a German suplex. It's sort of everybody takes turns getting one and giving one. Then Tracy Williams ends up executing a German suplex to both as they're sort of in a line, grabbing each other around the waist. It ends with a double suplex for the other two. We get a high knee to Deppen, but Lee drop kicks Williams and he sets Deppen up for the pile driver. We get a super kick, ripcord knee, and a sit-out powerbomb by Dragon Lee to Tony Deppen for two as Williams has to come in and break up the pin. It was a nice little sequence there. Williams and Lee have a strike exchange before a discus clothesline by Tracy Williams. Williams then sets Lee up for the pile driver, but the ref gets bumped. So he's sort of turned around in the corner. Dragon Lee hits a low blow to Williams. Deppen returns to roll up Williams, and at first the ref isn't in position, so it looks like this roll-up's for no reason. But Lee is just standing there. He doesn't do anything to break the cover. The ref eventually rolls over, the roll-up still taking place. He makes the count, and he gets the three count, and Deppen retains as Lee stands there and just sort of slow claps. So I was definitely looking for a good explanation as to why Dragon Lee just kind of let this happen, and we'll see. Commentary point out that Lee could have definitely stopped the pin, and I definitely noticed that and agree as well. So the rest of Violence Unlimited joined Deppen in the ring to celebrate. Kenny King and Bestia del Ring come out, and they talk about being smart. So here's the great explanation we get for what Dragon Lee just did. The strategy tonight, Kenny King tells us, was not to win. Okay, so that right away, there's a pretty unique strategy. We're going to try not to win this championship. So already I'm a little bit disconnected from this explanation. So it wasn't to win, but the goal was to not get pinned, since the person that gets pinned tumbles down the rankings. Something that's never been mentioned before or really focused on before, but apparently this is the focus of LFI right now, question mark. King says Lee is now the number one contender because Tracy Williams will fall down the ranks for taking the pin, and that so now Dragon Lee should get a one-on-one shot against Deppen at Best in the World, which is, that's the name of the July 11th pay-per-view, I couldn't remember. So you give up a chance to win the title right now to have another chance to win it later. Okay, and sure, you can say, but at least it's a one-on-one match and he'll have a better chance. But he still had a chance here. So I think this is pretty weak. But anyways, I'm sorry, but the finish seemed incredibly stupid to me and kind of ruined the match that I was enjoying. So Dragon Lee fights for this entire match, going for pinfalls right away. All of the stuff he went through in this match just to stand by and do nothing while somebody else wins. Because the goal was to not get pinned. How about winning this match and taking the belt now? That's not a good enough goal, I guess. I guess I don't understand goals or winning championships or whatever, but... So I guess the idea is that they care more about Tracy Williams moving down the rankings, but again, that's never been anything they've talked about. So they care about that more than having the title in their own faction. So I am disconnected from this logic. I don't like the finish to this match. I don't like their justification for the finish of this match. So it left me a little bit annoyed because I thought the match was quite enjoyable and some sort of different finish. It could have been really good. So I don't know if I'm missing something. This didn't make total sense to me. I feel like it was maybe one of those things that looked better on paper when they were planning it than in execution. So I you can tell I was not a fan of the finish of this match. The match itself, I was quite fine with, but the way it ended, not at all. So they just tell us that next week, that's basically the end of the show, but they now always end with a graphic telling us what to expect next week. So next week, we're going to get the final match in the Survival of the Fittest tournament, the six-man elimination. And then the other match we're going to get is Matt Taven versus Dutch of the Righteous. So that's the lineup there. So overall, I thought it was I'm still going to say it was a really good episode. It definitely lost marks for me for the nonsensical finish to the otherwise entertaining main event. Pretty much all of the in-ring action was good this week, and the storytelling in the opener I thought was really good as well. The main event was cruising along, I was enjoying it, until that questionable finishing sequence derailed it for me. Lee just literally gave up in the match and let somebody else win a championship, and the explanation that followed just simply wasn't good enough for me. I find that situation really hard to explain away. I don't think they did a good job of it. I was all set to give this show a B+, but I'm going to bump it down a bit from that frustrating finish. So that brings it down to an overall B. So I still thought a pretty good show, but again, I don't understand the choice they made to finish that main event. So that's going to bring me to the end of this review. I just forgot to say at the beginning, if you'd like to contact myself or my son who does the podcast with me on Saturdays, fnswrestling@gmail.com, fns_wrestling_podcast on Instagram, or if you're one of the few listening on YouTube, I still put it up there just in case, you can leave a comment there and I'll definitely get back to you. I'd love to hear any feedback, especially people that are listening to the solo missions of me talking about ROH. I really do appreciate you spending any time in your week to listen to me talk about wrestling. So I would imagine there'll be a Hell in a Cell review being published tonight up anywhere you're listening to this. You can probably find that. And then we'll be back on Saturday. And I think because AEW Dynamite's on Saturday night, we're going to have to actually put out a Sunday podcast as well just to review Dynamite, because we normally include it on Saturday, but won't be able to because it won't have happened yet. So that's what's upcoming for us. I look forward to any of you sort of giving us a listen and providing us with some feedback. So we will definitely either see you on Monday or on Saturday if you're interested in listening to some more. And until then, take care.